potato queen. That's it's in mostly Asian men who only attracted to white men. We got rice queen. That's white men who only attracted to Asian men. And then we got sticky rice. So Asian men who likes other Asian men.
People who are queer have experienced discrimination themselves. That often that can, in fact, set up a little bit of a pattern that then they feel okay to discriminate against other people.
Warning, adult content. The Hookup, love and f***ing on Triple J.
In the past week, gay, bi and trans dating app Grindr launched Kinda, a campaign against racial discrimination on its platform. We're looking at the dating experiences of queer people of colour, why there's so much in-your-face racism, and what we can do about it. First up, here's Budi. He was born in Indonesia, and while he's lived in Australia for most of his life, he still experiences abuse online just because of his ethnicity. I asked him about his experience dating online.
There's still a lot of people who are saying quite a few things. They can be very, very direct when it comes to their racial preference. And I've encountered people who turn around and just say, look, you know, no offense, but it's just not into Asians, not into Indians, not into Aboriginals, not into Indian Africans, not into Blacks or whatever else. So they're very, very forward about it. And I keep hearing people saying that they're making an excuse for it, they're making a justification about it. They just say, look, you know, it's my preference, you can't say anything about it. Does it mean that I'm sexist because I prefer men? And it still struck me until now how much freedom that they feel they have to clearly, blatantly exclude people. Because in normal daily life, if I sit down in the pub, they won't say that. You know, they will be fairly nice and polite and say, hey, look, this is just not my thing. But on the apps and online, they're just very, very forward about it.
And you think it's definitely got something to do with, like, yeah, the fact that you're online and you don't have to look someone in the face. But why do you feel like this kind of happens? And I don't know, like, how did that make you feel, like, starting to date when all of this vitriol was out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that people often don't realize. There is a recipient of these messages. There is another person at the end of it. So when I first saw it, I thought, okay, maybe it's just that person being a little bit, racist or a bigot or whatever. But when I keep seeing it over and over and over again, that's when I start seeing, well, actually, there is a pattern here. You know, there is a pattern about not liking people of a certain race. And it, for me, seeing that is just replicating this feeling that I had since I moved to Australia about not being wanted, not being included, you know, being seen as the racial other, being seen as someone who sit on the outside, on the margin. And it's very tough for a lot of us. And I speak to my friends about this many, many times. You know, we've been marginalized because we're gay, because of our sexuality. And on top of that, even within the gay scene, we're being marginalized again because we are Asian. And it made me actually felt ashamed about my own ethnicity and my race for a very long time, because it makes me question, where am I? You know, where am I in this space? Do I have a space? Can I exist in this world? And it took a while to rebuild that confidence and regaining that self-esteem again. And that's one thing that I keep saying to people. Look, we all have preferences, let's face it. I'm not playing, you know, I'm not playing an angel here. But just remember, there is actually someone at the other end of it who's listening to this, who's hearing these messages, and they can actually have a really, really negative impact on the way we see ourselves. And this is something that I don't think a lot of people understand, even until now. I think people still making excuses and justification for allowing themselves to say something that is, for me, it's blatant racism. There's no but or if about it. It's very much you're excluding a whole entire population just based on the color of their skin. So where do they get these messages from? Who said that message that this whole group of people is basically not desirable? Who said that? So, yeah, it's been a very interesting discussion. I mean, you know, like I said, the online dating started in the late 90s. And what year are we now? 2018, and we're still having that discussion, and we're still facing resistance from people. So it's an ongoing discussion that needs to happen.
And it's good to be having it now, but I sort of, as was I was reading your story and reading what you were saying about it, that you even kind of started to judge and not want to date other Asian guys for like the same reasons that guys didn't want to date you. Can you tell me about that?
Well, I think that's when the negative messages started to get internalized. It started to get in, and I started to actually believe in them. I actually believe in those messages, and I believe in this thinking that being Asian is not desirable. Therefore, I should just date the most desirable race, if you want to call it. That's the that we set up ourselves, and it's still the white men. So I went through that journey of trying to fit in and trying to find my place, and I came out of that journey thinking that's actually not fair on anyone. I came out of thinking of that journey, well, actually I'm replicating something that I've been fighting against. So that's when I start to realize the way I think, who I like, is actually not purely just from my inner being, but it's been influenced by what other people telling me, but what I see in the gay press, what I hear from my peers. So it's just a way of overcoming that and really start finding comfort in my own skin. Like I said, you know, I hated myself for a long time. I didn't express it. I didn't say it to people, but I hated myself. And to regain that self confidence, that's when I start to be, I would say, feel liberated, because suddenly I don't have to follow the script and I can find a place where I can just like whoever I like and don't really care about all those hierarchy that we created. And now I'm in the point where I actually questioning those hierarchy and said, you know, and I asked myself, who set this hierarchy? Honestly, I mean, you know, we don't just create a community and then decided that one group of people is better than the others. So who said it? And that's one thing that I still like to have a dialogue about it, and trying to make the community more aware that at the end of the day, it's not about race. At the end of the day, you know, we try to work together as a community, and we try to challenge a lot of the discrimination that we face ourselves. So let's be a role model for ourselves, you know, before we start preaching to others.
Yeah. It's The Hookup on Triple J. I'm Nat Tenchich, and I'm here with Budi Siddhartha. And if any of what Budi was saying spoke to you, we are going to be joined by a psychologist very soon to talk through how you can grapple with some of these issues, because it can be very painful to see these kinds of things on social media and on dating apps and in the dating scene. We're talking about racism and the experiences of queer people of colour dating. And to answer some of those more big picture questions, like why are we seeing, this internal minority sort of struggle? We're joined right now by sociologist Dr. Zuleika Zavalos. She specialises in issues of gender and sexuality, culture, discrimination and diversity. Dr. Zavalos, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I think, that first big picture question is something that really interests me. Why do we see this happening in the queer community? Why, when you're already sort of discriminated against, do you see that next level of discrimination come through so loudly?
I think for some people it seems counterintuitive, because obviously queer communities are facing discrimination along sexual lines, but at the same time, all of us live in the same society that is dominated by whiteness. We have a long history of racial discrimination against Indigenous communities and against migrant people, especially migrant people of colour. So when we look at it in a social context, LGBTQIA communities are surrounded by the same social influences when it comes to race as straight people.
And that's pretty much there. Like, it is just what it is. What else might make dating more difficult for people of colour in Australia?
It comes down to the fact that Australia is a very diverse nation. Around half of all Australians are either a first or second generation migrant. A second generation migrant, somebody who was born in Australia with at least one parent born overseas. So that's about half of our nation who have a migrant heritage, but they come from over 190 different countries. And similarly for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, while they make up 3% of the national population, they have their origins in over 200 different cultural and language groups. So there's this really rich diversity that makes our country very special, but it also means that the majority of these small groups are very small. There's a lot of diversity, but there's really not a lot of people within those. And then the numbers obviously go down even further for LGBTQIA people of colour. So meeting someone from the same cultural or racial background is really tough. And we also know from research looking at the patterns of how people date and also marriage patterns and general partnership that the majority of migrants and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people tend to partner up with people outside of their own ethnic and racial background. So there's a lot of diversity, but at the same time, racism is part of everyday life for Indigenous people and for other people of colour. A lot of our national surveys show this. There's a really important study that was done by Western Sydney University, which found that around 35% of Australian minorities have experienced racism, particularly in public spaces, like in public transport or when they're walking down the street. And then for Aboriginal people, they actually face 2.5 times the rate of recurring racism compared to non-Indigenous people. And then when it comes to online spaces, Aboriginal people actually, up to 90% of Aboriginal people have experienced racism or witnessed racism online. So this actually shows that racism is a recurring part of everyday life for minorities. And then the patterns are being just replicated in online spaces for LGBTQIA people of colour. And also, I guess, perhaps it's a bit more overt for people to notice on dating apps because people are putting those prejudices on their profile. But the patterns are the same. So, you know, we've got a study that was published in Australia of over 2,000 gay and bisexual men. That study found that queer men see sexual racism as being just a normal part of their personal preferences. It's something that they're very open about. There was a really amazing study that was recently published by Stonewall, and that found that around half of all LGBT people of colour have experienced racism within their LGBT community groups, but for black LGBT people, around 61% have been discriminated against in queer spaces. So there's we're just seeing the same sorts of patterns that happen in straight spaces, also in queer communities, because racism is just such a deeply embedded aspect of our society that we're still grappling with and that we still need to work really hard, not just at the interpersonal level, but also at the societal level to battle.
So it's kind of that the pool is so small that it sort of has this amplifying effect, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the numbers are, as you're saying, the numbers are very small. And then it's sort of a multiplying effect for queer people of colour, where they're facing racism in just broader society, just when they're walking down the street or when they're at work, when they're at uni, and then they're going into dating apps or they're going, you know, in other queer spaces and facing that on top of the other forms of racial discrimination that they face.
Zuleika Zavellas, thank you so much for joining us on The Hookup.
No worries. Thank you.
Dr. Zuleika Zavellas is a sociologist and specialises in gender and sexuality, culture, discrimination and diversity. I'm Nat Tenchich, and tonight we are talking about the experiences of being a person of colour in the queer dating scene. Mid-last week, Grindr, the gay dating app, launched the Kinder campaign, which is aiming to stamp out racism and discrimination in the queer dating community. because there's been some pretty harsh things that have been said online. And we've already heard a little bit from Budi Sudarso, who is gay and Indonesian. But right now, joining us to share some more stories and also talk about how you can deal with these issues on a personal level if they are getting to you. We are joined by Aziel Sanchez and clinical psychologist Dr. Glenn Hosking. Everyone, welcome to The Hookup.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
So, Aziel, I want to start with your story because it's a really interesting one. You've been kind of all over the world and experienced dating scenes in lots of different places.
A little bit, yeah. I've been around.
Can you talk us through it?
Yeah, of course. Well, I was born and raised in Mexico, and I spent quite a bit of time in the States as well, a few years, and then moved down to Australia. So it's interesting kind of moving from Mexico to the States, where the racism is very blatant against the Latinx community. And, you know, you have people coming up and very much saying to your face, oh, you can't do that because you're Mexican or you're Latino, and just having no qualms about it. Whereas here in Australia, I think people don't quite know where to place me. So that makes for a very interesting interaction, I suppose, between people. I remember there was this one guy that I was talking to who initially asked me if I was Indian. And I said, no, I'm Mexican. And he was like, oh, okay, as long as you're Indian, it's as long as you're not Indian, it's completely fine. I was like, oh, that's a bit strange, isn't it? I would be exactly the same person. But for some reason, there was a very strong opposition to Indians. And it's just a very bizarre kind of thing that you find, you know, people kind of come up with.
Yeah, and what other sorts of experiences have you had on dating apps like that? Have you sort of seen the same things Budi was talking about where people were just like, yeah, again, no Indians or no Chinese people. Like, what have you seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very, it's funny because my partner's from a Chinese background, and I think the type of racism that he gets being from China is very different to the type of racism that I get being from kind of Mexico and Latino. And I think a lot of people tend to almost fetishize, you know, Latinx people and think they're, you know, sexy or hot or whatever. Whereas, you know, Asian communities, particularly in Australia, tend to be a lot more marginalized, and there's a lot of, you know, history behind that. So I think from my perspective, I'm in this weird kind of in-between space where I find I'm either fetishized when someone finds out I'm from Mexico, or alternatively, I'm kind of completely erased and people just kind of put me in this blank canvas and just project what kind of racial attitudes or prejudices they have onto this person who they don't really have any idea where they come from or you know, what it means to be Mexican. A lot of the time I get, you know, I'm from Mexico and they're like, oh, I went to Taco Bell that one time. I'm like, oh, cool. But, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, and how does that sort of feel being fetishized and made to be this exotic thing from somewhere else?
To be honest, I was hearing what Budi was kind of saying before, and I kind of felt almost, I very much resonated with the fact that initially I think it made me very ashamed of my own culture, my own background. And for a very long time, I felt like I was either kind of queer or Latinx. And there was very little in between, or there was no way of kind of putting the two together. It felt very much a separate thing. And as I grew more comfortable and I came to understand the kind of the racism and the forces that were influencing it all, I find a way of kind of reconciling the two. And I felt like I almost went the other way. I think I now tend to avoid kind of white spaces. And to kind of quote Hannah Gadsby, it's like not all men, but a lot of them, you know. So it tends to be that now that if, you know, there's something that's kind of very racially charged, I tend to just kind of put it to the side, avoid it, and found community, you know, within the Latinx crowd, within queer people of color. So kind of this space that validates both and is able to actually reconcile and almost heal kind of both of those parts from kind of the homophobia and the transphobia and the queerphobia side of things and from the racism side of things. And it's this kind of beautiful space where they can come together.
Yeah. Dr. Glenn, like, how common is what we've been talking about in what in clients that you have seen?
Look, I mean, one of the really unfortunate things is that it is very common. And I think both of the experiences that we've just heard tonight really encapsulate the kind of main experiences that people have. And I think one of the really unfortunate things that I'm observing is that it's really normalised. In a way, it's just a kind of accepted part of particularly, like you were saying earlier, apps, because people are, you know, up behind a computer and they don't think of the full implications of what they're saying and like what Buddy was saying, that it actually is having an impact on someone. So unfortunately, that's one of the really concerning things that I've seen, is that it's really normalised.
And we've been talking about the fact that it's twofold, you know. You're already dealing with homophobia and transphobia and that type of discrimination, and then it's another layer on top of that. What can that, like, extra weight do to you?
Oh, well, it's huge, absolutely, that people are already in a vulnerable state, that already have sort of an underlying, often, view of themselves, that there's something inherently wrong with what they are and who they are. And to then add to that, when people do make connections in the gay and lesbian, you know, etc. community, is really difficult, because it just adds to the already vulnerable state that people are in.
I think Buddy was talking a little bit earlier too about the way that you can sort of internalise that kind of racism and then project it back out onto people like you and sort of throw that away. I think Buddy, I was reading your work, and you introduced me to the term potato queen. Can you explain what that is just very quickly?
So potato queen, that's it's a mostly Asian men who only attracted to white men. And then we got a lot of other stuff. We got rice queen, that's white men who only attracted to Asian men. And then we got sticky rice, so Asian men who likes other Asian men. We got banana queen, if you're kind of like of the, you know, yellow, so Chinese men who likes white men. So there's a lot of those jargons around.
How damaging can that kind of, like, thing be?
Well, I mean, absolutely, for all of the reasons that we kind of mentioned. And I think that one of the sort of important things kind of about this, and sometimes I think of it, some of the explanations for something like this, is that because people who are queer have experienced discrimination themselves, that often that can, in fact, set up a little bit of a pattern that then they feel okay to discriminate against other people. And so I think the Buddy's point is exactly right, that you can develop these internalised views of yourself that then impact on how you interact with other people.
It's The Hookup on Triple J. We are talking all about the experiences of queer people of colour and how you can deal with that kind of internalised racism and the double aspect of, you know, feeling like discriminated against in multiple layers. How can young people like Buddy and Aziel, like, galvanise themselves and move forward, I suppose?
Look, I think some of the stuff that Buddy was mentioning earlier is a really important one. And I think that one of the big risks within this space is that people do start to develop negative views about who they are. And so thoughts of, you know, worthlessness and not being good enough and being defective. And that's not valid, and it's really important that when people do start having some of those thoughts and do start viewing themselves in that way, that they work really hard to kind of challenge that and to appreciate how it is not valid. And sometimes, you know, that's not an easy thing, particularly because of that vulnerability that is there, because people who are queer have often had some of those thoughts before. And so it can be a hard thing to shift, and sometimes it is worthwhile getting some assistance, professional assistance, to do that. But really, first and foremost, I think one of the biggest risk factors of this is that it can lead people to develop some of those negative views about themselves, which we know is a real precursor to mood problems and depression and other mental health issues.
But I guess there's a something of a light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully, and we'll get to some of that conversation in a moment as well and what we can do moving forward. But I'd very much like to thank Budi and Aziel for sharing your stories with us on The Hookup. Budi Sidarto and Aziel Sanchez, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Tonight, we're still with clinical psychologist Dr. Glenn Hosking, but right now joining us is the Larrakia woman, Laniuk Garson-Mills, who is also a lesbian and here to talk about her experiences. Thank you so much for joining us on The Hookup.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So you had a bit of a problematic experience with a person not of colour, a white person. Mm-hmm. Can you talk us through what happened and how it changed the way you see dating?
Oh, well, look, my first partner, she really sort of tokenized me, you know what I mean? I mean, you could say that maybe she meant well, but, you know, she'd sort of get on these, like, political arguments on Facebook and they'd be like, my Aboriginal girlfriend says, you know what I mean? And sort of, like to sort of show me off and be like, look how non-racist I am because of my proximity to this person of colour, you know what I mean? And, I mean, I wouldn't say that she single-handedly was the person that sort of turned me away from, you know, dating or seeing white people. I mean, I think it's a structural thing. I think I choose to avoid entering relationships with white people because of the larger race relations, you know, within this space. So I don't think it was necessarily her in particular, but I think she opened my eyes to a lot of what being in a relationship with a white person could be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think she was like, yeah, it's interesting to get that take. Like, do you think in some ways maybe she was just like overshooting being an ally, or do you think it really was like very much a self-involved thing?
I think it was a self-involved thing. I mean, she was a piece of work, like all things aside, you know, she was next level. But, you know, I think that the racism within the queer community is not anything new or anything particular outside of any other sort of tension or race relations within any other wider community or any other demographic. I think that Australia has an issue with racism. I think Australia is in a very large state of denial. And, you know, the only way to tackle that within the queer community is to tackle it within the larger community, to accept that we are living in a nation that was founded on white supremacy, continues to function within white supremacy, to tackle that, to decenter whiteness. I mean, look at our parliament, you know what I mean? Like, that's a bunch of old white men deciding what happens. Like, yeah, for sure, there's racism within the queer community, but that's just a reflection from the broader society.
And we'll get into that in just a moment, but I do want to talk about the way that your now experiences dating other queer people of colour. Mm-hmm. How does it compare for you?
Mm. You know, I think there's a sense of understanding and solidarity. I think, you know, there's a little, when you come home and you're like, this person said this really messed up thing to me today, there's a level of understanding and there's a level of not needing to explain. I was, you know, said to someone earlier today, like, I want a relationship, not a project. I don't want to have to be constantly, like, you know, educating you on what it means to be with me or what it means to be me. I do think, however, that there is a very particular, unique tension between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. I think what it means to be, you know, Indigenous means to inherently challenge the colonial settler state. And that is a tension that exists amongst all, I think, races. And so there's a sort of a level of education that has to happen there, but it's less effort with a person of colour. Particularly if they come from a nation or a people that were colonized themselves, they have some sort of empathy that exists there that I don't have to fight for.
Do you ever get the sort of, like, do you ever get any kinds of tensions in that kind of space when you're dating other queer people of colour? Like, do you ever kind of come across, like, racism even within that subset of the community? Or is it just completely golden?
An ex of mine came home with me once to Darwin, and this was years ago. We were quite young, and we were going for a celebration. It was my brother's 21st. We're all getting together. We're going to the park, and we had a really beautiful day. My dad cooked all this food. My auntie was playing the guitar. One of my uncles got a little bit drunk and started telling everyone how much he loved everyone. But it was just a really beautiful day with kids playing, you know, football. And when we left, she said, you know, it's just not what I was expecting. You hear all these things about Aboriginal people. You hear about Aboriginal people, you know, being drunk and being violent. And this was the first time that she had interacted with a group of people that large. And of course she's carrying stereotypes. There are so many stereotypes and negative ideas about Aboriginal people out there. I don't hold it against her for a second. But even within, you know, communities of colour, there's still that tension and that stereotyping happening. Yeah.
Dr. Glenn, we know that there's this problem. We can see it and it's happening. And as, you know, as Lanyuk said, like, it's not just in the queer community. It is a thing that's happening at large. This is just like another example or take on it. What can we sort of do to fix it? You know, is it as simple as just stopping racist?
Well, that would be really nice, wouldn't it? But, I mean, one of the things that we've got to really appreciate is that this has a really significant impact on people, that people's mental health is really affected. And everything that Lanyuk said then about because of people's experience, Indigenous people's experience with non-Indigenous people, it's going to then make sense that people are going to find it difficult to have relationships with non-Indigenous people, whatever those relationships are like, whether they be an intimate relationship or otherwise, because of that history. And we, you know, there's a lot of broader things that that need to happen for that to be a bit easier. But there's this sensitivity that is often going to follow a person of colour around because of those experiences, an understandable sensitivity that makes complete sense. And until that's worked through properly, these problems are likely to continue.
We've been talking a lot about this whole idea of, like, double discrimination as well. Like, already being a queer person is one level enough of otherness and difference. How can you kind of, at least in the queer community, like, tap into that feeling to garner a bit of empathy for people of colour? Lanyuk, I want to start with you here.
Can you say that again?
Is that possible?
Pitch it to me again. Let's work through this.
It is a big question.
Yeah. Well, okay. Dr. Glenn, can you?
Well, I mean, I think that we certainly need to have a greater empathy and understanding about all this sort of stuff. And there does need to be more of an integration in terms of people knowing the impact that these things have, and that it is not right for people to actively discriminate against races on Grindr or Tinder or whatever the forum might be, that there does need to be that. And I think part of that is that people do share their experiences. I think that sometimes people are ashamed to share their experiences of this kind of stuff. And so that's why it's great when we have programs like this with you know, people like Budi and others talking about their experiences, because you do get to appreciate that kind of impact that is having, and that hopefully someone and people can start to appreciate a lot more around the impact that this is having on people.
If you are dating someone who, you know, you're feeling is treating you differently or discriminate against you, or like you can feel that prejudice within your relationship and it's having an impact, how can you have that conversation with that person? How do you start bringing it up?
Look, I mean, it's a tough one, but an important one to do, and something that is likely to help the relationship. Really, you know, talking. Helping the person to develop that empathy about how the person is feeling. So to talk about, well, when that happens, I find it really difficult because of these kind of things, you know, because of these sorts of experiences. So people can have more of an understanding about, you know, this might not seem like an issue to you, but given my history where I've experienced this throughout my life, and given my ancestors have experienced this throughout their lives, this is a really tough thing for me, because I think that some of the time those things are impacted by an ignorance or a not wanting to appreciate the impact of it.
Laniok, you were talking about, you know, taking your one of your exes to meet your family and grappling with that stereotype that they kind of had in their head. How did you go about having that conversation with that person?
And, you know, there's always a lot of love in these relationships. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of patience. And like I said, I don't blame her for a second for having that type of stereotype or opinion, because that is a lot of what people are hearing about Aboriginal people. So it kind of takes a soft moment to sort of be like, I understand that that's what you were thinking. I'm glad that that was challenged. I'm glad that you could see that that's not the reality. And, you know, she is a person of colour, and so there was an opportunity, I think, to connect on that level as well. But it still takes energy, you know? It still takes energy. And, I mean, I had an argument with her recently. And, you know, because a lot of people like to say that a lot of people like to claim not being racist. They like to say, I'm not racist. It's like, yeah, well, are you engaging with that on an emotional level? You know, are you actually feeling that and engaging with that enough for it to mean something? And we were sort of having this argument. She was like, you know, but what can I do? And I was like, Google. You know what I mean? I'm not here to be your teacher. If you want to know things and you want to educate yourself and you want to say that you're not racist, go out and do some research, you know, and educate yourself and take labor off people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, how exhausting do you kind of find it having to do this all the time?
It's tiring. It's like every time I meet someone, I have to sit through and work through their emotions, you know what I mean? And they just want to, like, tell me all of the things that they're feeling about, you know, how terrible it is the Australian government does. It's like, yeah, cool. I know. You know, what are you doing about it? You know what I mean?
It's The Hookup on Triple J, Nat Tenchich with you. And thank you so much, Laniok Garson-Mills, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Glenn Hosking, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And you can read many of the stories, including Readers, which is very interesting, in Living and Loving in Diversity by Maria Palotta Chiroli, which is available now via Wakefield Press.
Google. You know what I mean? I'm not here to be your teacher. If you want to know things and you want to educate yourself and you want to say that you're not racist, go out and do some research. You know, and educate yourself and take labor off people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, how exhausting do you kind of find it having to do this all the time?
Tiring. It's like every time I meet someone, I have to sit through and work through their emotions. You know what I mean? And they just want to, like, tell me all of the things that they're feeling about, you know, how terrible it is the Australian government does. It's like, yeah, cool. I know. You know, what are you doing about it? You know what I mean?
It's The Hookup on Triple J, Nat Tenchich with you. And thank you so much, Laniok Garson-Mills, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Glenn Hosking, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And you can read many of the stories, including Readers, which is very interesting, in Living and Loving in Diversity by Maria Palotta Chiroli, which is available now via Wakefield Press.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If there's something you want covered on the show, send it in via thehookup@abc.net.au or via Facebook. Just search for The Hookup on Triple J. Plus, if you're loving what you're hearing, give us a rating wherever you find your favourite podcasts. It'll help other people find the show.